So quick introduction, Barbara, we're very excited to have her. She's a CTO. Last week I described a lot of people, their goal is to make it to the C-suite. And so she's going to talk about her journey. She's going to talk about technology, blockchain, what the future looks like from her eyes. So we're very excited to hear her story. So Barbara, welcome to the stage.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you guys. Thank you for having me. It's Friday morning and it's very early. I'm an old developer, so, you know, my journey to a CTO doesn't start at this time in the morning. So today we're going to talk about my journey, kind of some of my learnings, and then we'll ask questions. So I'm Barbara Bickham. I'm the CTO of Trailin Ventures. We do blockchain advisory. I'm also chief of the block at the Blockchain Accelerator, so we help blockchain companies get funded, and we also help blockchain companies go global. And then I'm also raising a fund now. It's a female women-focused fund, so that's in process. This is a little bit... It's in process. You say you're raising a fund, and it takes a minute, so it's in process. These are little facts about me, but I like to walk in the sun, and I also like to be at the beach, but one kind of fun fact about me that's not on this slide is that I am a poker champion. So I have won several poker tournaments for charity. I play for charity, but I'm a very pretty good poker player. So here's my origin story. Everyone asks, like, how did I get into computers and, you know, how was I interested in about technology? So if anyone knows what that computer is, they win a prize over there. But that's an Apple IIe. My father was a doctor, and he was an early adopter of all technology. So this thing showed up in the house when I was 12 years old. And when I was 12, I was in high school. So in high school, in ninth grade, that I had to take twice, the computer showed up, and there was a class that we had to create area of a circle. So I said, okay. We had to create a flow chart. I said, okay, well, I could do that. Pi r squared, area of a circle, that's cool, right? But I said, well, why don't I do area of a rectangle too? Which means you can do area of a square and then area of a triangle. So I just went crazy on the flow chart. And clearly I got an A in that class, and that was kind of the genesis of how that came about. Oops. So I had a very traditional journey. I had a computer science degree from Berkeley. Bears. Go Bears. I became a software architect. I've been architecting systems. My very first job out of the gate, they said, Barb, here's a blank sheet of paper. We want you to build this system. I said, are you serious? I just got out of school. Are you crazy here? They said, no, we're not crazy. We want you to do it. So I've been architecting and designing systems for many, many years. Did a lot of coding, worked on a lot of products. And then I went into management, kind of traditional track, learned how to manage people, learned how to manage budgets. And then that doesn't say end, it says next. So what happened next? I became an entrepreneur. I always wanted to have a company. I always thought I would be an educational software company. I thought I would do that because I wanted to train people how to be more smarter. Or I don't know why I thought that, but thought that. And so I became an entrepreneur, but TechGenai ended up becoming a wireless company. So I started it as a product company. It was going to do wireless roaming across networks. And we're in Hollywood, and somebody came to me and said, I want to put that American Idol style voting and polling in my show. And that started happening a lot. I said, there's an opportunity. So I repositioned my company from a products company to a services company. So digital strategy, I had to go around and explain what that was because I kind of created that and nobody knew what it was. And I said, well, it's kind of putting things on phones and it's kind of doing that ringtone thing. And it's kind of like putting your content in various and sundry places. And it was a big learning experience because you had to train people as to really, like, what were you doing and what were you providing? But I did that for 9 years. And in the intersection of that, I got asked to do an angel group. And I also went into private equity. So I learned about investing and business, more about business, and how do you fund businesses, and how do businesses get created, and how are they structured, and how are they monetized. So this was a great learning experience. So I just tried that. Then I had to go back to my coding roots. So I went back to my coding roots and went kind of into the AI space. And I won the Gartner Cool Vendor Award. I'm an award-winning REST API writer. So I write a lot of REST APIs still. And then I became a CTO. So at this level, I do a lot of strategy. I still do a lot of fundraising. And I do a lot in advanced tech, blockchain, AI. Still get asked to do that. So what are some of my learnings? Because this has been kind of an interesting journey. I've gotten an opportunity to do many things. One is you got to kind of keep up with the latest technology. Because in the transition between private equity and back to coding, a lot of things have changed in 10 years. And as a matter of fact, a lot of people didn't even know I could code. Because when I popped up and said I'm a CTO, and they were like, you know how to code? I'm like, yes, computer science from Berkeley. Doesn't that tell you something? But they just didn't know, because as the CEO of a company, they didn't know I had that technical side. They only saw me as a business person, which makes sense. So keep up with the latest stuff. ABC, that is a thing. Always be coding and always be learning. Maybe it's ABL, always be learning. Because if you have to transition yourself into something, like I transitioned from coding to entrepreneur to investment, back to coding, now back to entrepreneur, then you need to be able to evolve and change yourself. So you always need to be learning new skills, taking a chance on yourself, learning more about yourself, getting out of your comfort zone, and learn a lot of different types of things. So I try things so I can learn different things. Don't just say, I'm going to code. Maybe take some art classes. Maybe take some other types of training classes that are outside of what you normally do, because that could serve you for something later. I took an acting class so I could stand up here and talk to you guys. I did that many years ago. I wasn't the best speaker or best public speaker. And so I said, well, maybe I need to learn how to do that. So I took acting, speech, how do you go on a video? How do you present yourself? So that was important. If you don't know how to present yourself, go learn how to do that. We're in LA. This is the best place in the world to learn how to do that. Like, you know, we're in LA. And you develop you. So when I transitioned before I became a CTO, I was at a European company. I was a lone American in a European company, so I had no support. So I said, well, now I got how do I learn some of the things I need to learn? So I joined some meetup groups, and we would read these books every week, and we'd go through these books, and we would learn about Java or management or fundraising or whatever. We had a list of books. But, I mean, that support was great. So you have to support you, because your company may not always do it. And that's kind of it. It's a very quick talk.
That was super quick. Love hearing the journey. Love hearing all the various things you were doing. We're going to open it up to questions. If you've got a question, we'd love to hear it. We'd love to hear Barbara's answer. And maybe I'll kick it off. So when you started your journey from your first job out of school, what did you hope years later you would be doing?
What did I hope I'd be doing? I always knew I was going to have a company. I always knew that inside of myself. So I always thought that would be it. I never thought I would get into the technical side of this, like at the C level. I always thought I would be a CEO, and I have been, and I have been CEO of my company and other companies as well. So that's always kind of what I thought my trajectory would be. Strangely enough. Jan?
Hey, Barbara. Actually, I've got a question for you. Why did you thought, or where did the idea of starting an investment fund come from? Because that's a little bit outside of a CTO, even though you are involved with fundraising.
Yeah, if you go back, let's go back. Because I like going back. So in this period of time, I got an opportunity to start an angel group. The angel group disappeared because it happened from 2007 to kind of 2009, and, you know, the economy crashed. So, like, the angels were a little less angel-y, and so they disappeared. So I said, okay, close that group. And then I went to a private equity company, and that person unfortunately passed away. And so a lot of people knew I had the capability of raising money. I mean, I've raised $50 million in my lifetime. And so when I told people, well, someone came to me kind of last year and said, hey, Barb, I want you to help me raise this fund. And I said, okay, it's time for me to do that. And they said, we see you as this person because they know me as that. And so when it was the opportunity for me to do my own fund, I said, well, yeah, why not? I just try stuff. It's like, let's just try it. Why not? Huh? You can do it. Why not?
Okay. So the guys from IBA came a few weeks back,
yeah.
And I asked them, why did you decide to do a blockchain accelerator? And they said, well, we met Barbara. And so can you talk a little bit about how you met them and how you guys came up with the idea of doing a blockchain accelerator, and how did you get into blockchain? I'm just sort of curious because that's how I know you, and we haven't actually talked about that.
Okay, so two questions. All right, I'll talk about how I got into the blockchain, then I'll talk about the blockchain accelerator because that's a great thing. I know a lot of the early blockchain pioneers, 2012, somebody came to me. I won't say who they are, but a lot of you guys know who they are if you think about LA. And they came, and one person in particular was like, Barb, you need to get into this blockchain thing. I'm like, man, that ain't a thing. I'm like, no, I can't do that. So I kind of missed that wave. And then 2015, I heard a talk, Andreas Antonopoulos, he's like a famous Bitcoin person, and some people were in this space. And so 2015, I learned about kind of how does money work and how was money created. And I said, wow, this is actually super fascinating. So I tried to get in there as a developer. That didn't work. So 2017, I had a client come called TuTransfer, and they do money and remittance on the blockchain. They do it in Mexico, Colombia. They do it outside of the U.S. And so I got in there, and then last year I went to a company called Exchange Rate, and they had $1 million when I went. I went in as their CEO, left with 11. So I raised them $10 million in a very fast time. And then that's kind of it. Everyone said, Barb's in the blockchain, Barb's technical. Bam, that's how that happened. So the blockchain accelerator, I had another business partner, and in December of 2017, we were having these long discussions about starting a blockchain accelerator with that business partner. And I went and did all the surveying of all the companies and accelerators around the world to see, like, was there a bunch of them in the United States? How did they work? Things of that nature. So I had the framework for a blockchain accelerator because I'd already been planning to do one. And so when I met Chris and Michael, we just kind of combined our forces and created the blockchain accelerator for global growth. So that's how that came about. And we are still accepting applications, by the way. So if you guys want to apply, still time. Close today.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So my question is, when you left college, you got a great opportunity, which yes. doesn't happen for a lot of people.
I told them they were crazy.
Right. So given the fact that you had such an upstart coming out of college, is there any specific thing that you do now that you do to solicit yourself, your services, or market yourself? How do people continue to find you? Is it because of the track record that you've built and the rapport? Like, how does that continue to happen, these opportunities?
Well, two ways. I have a lot of friends over the years, having started a company and been successful at doing certain things, and they know me for that. So I'm just called upon to do that. I do take advantage of the fact that I'm one of the few female CTOs around. I do take advantage of that. I speak at various places. People find me that way. I mean, I'm on the internet. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. I'm on all the social, LinkedIn. You know, I'm on everything. WhatsApp, Telegram, on everything now. So I'm on all the social media. So, you know, you have to create your niche. Like, what is your niche? And what are you kind of good at? What hone what you're good at and kind of go for it. I mean, I do a lot of things. Many people don't recognize, like, how many things I wrote. Jan knows a little bit. But, I mean, I do a lot of things. So I get approached and I just try a lot of things. So, like, when opportunity presents itself, unless it's like so much out of your comfort zone. It's like, no, nah, because somebody asked me to be the CFO of their company. I said, no, you don't want me to do that. I can do this, but you don't want me doing that. So, I mean, you just have to be clear on what you're good at and just, you know, when opportunity presents itself, go for it. That's what I've done. But, you know, I play poker. So I'm a gambler. You know, I'm just going to go for it. Hey, all in. No, I'm going to fold this. No, you know, you guys can win that hand. I'm cool.
I'd like to actually talk more about those opportunities with you or hear your experiences jumping around, because you say that you had this sort of traditional software developer, right to management. But then after that, it definitely seems to be less traditional from what a lot of us have seen and experienced. And specifically, I'm interested in how you grew yourself in all of these different areas, from investment to private equity, CEO, CTO. Where did you find mentorship and how did you grow and work through those?
That's a very good question. So I've been very, very, very fortunate in my life to have some wonderful managers and mentors in my world. They're all, most of them are men, you know, because I'm in a man's world, so it's okay. But I've been very, very fortunate to have that. And if you have someone in your corner and can support you and sponsor you and bounce things off of you and hold you accountable and things of that nature, that's a wonderful thing. So you have to seek those people out. They're not just going to fall in your lap, but if you have favor with someone and you see that, you know, you guys are synergistic in that way, then I've just been very fortunate in that way. And I got a thick skin because I play poker, you know. Got to have a tough skin for that, too.
Over here, Barbara.
Yeah, hi, Barb. Sorry, I don't have my glasses, so I can't see you.
My name's Greg. I'm tall.
Yeah, I see you, Greg.
Blue shirt.
I saw you stand up.
All right, good deal. Listen, two questions. A friend of mine has a blockchain-related startup. He's looking to kind of grow it and find some money. Can he call you for advice, or should he just go on your website?
Okay, there's two ways to engage me.
I have a second part of my question, too.
Two ways to engage me in the blockchain space, but okay.
Okay, so the second part is you talked about you're a poker player and you're all in, and sometimes you have to fold. What part has bluffing played in your success? And then should my friend with the blockchain idea just go on your website, or can he call you for advice or what?
Okay. Two ways to engage me in the blockchain space. This is going to be far cheaper than engaging me personally. Number one, I'm going to say that. Because I have kind of walled myself up a little bit as to like kind of where I am. So I'm a tech mentor kind of around the town. So if you're in one of the accelerators, cohorts, incubators, you know, pre-accelerators, I'm not in anything up here. But, I mean, if you're in one of the places where I am, then you can engage me that way. You can have them apply for the blockchain accelerator if they really want to raise money and accelerate their company. Or if they want to engage me personally, they can go on my website and see what I do that way. Those are the three ways to do that. The other question was, what about bluffing? I mean, I don't bluff. I don't bluff. I don't do that. Like, if my cards are not happening, I'm like, you know what? These cards are not happening. I'm going to put these cards down. Because you know what? The thing about poker, as opposed to blackjack, there's always another hand. See, blackjack, most people don't understand. See, my brother's really good at blackjack. I'm not that great. Because you're playing against the dealer. When you're playing against the house, it's already stacked against you. In poker, you're playing against everyone else at the table. See, I can control my reactions and my kind of interaction when I'm playing against everyone else as opposed to the house. So I'll fold those cards up and be like, later, fold, next hand. Sometimes you got to do that. Next. That's how poker works.
Hey, Barb.
Hey.
Great talk. Thank you. I noticed you have a ton of interest in a lot of self-development. I was wondering if you could talk about your time management, I don't know, work-life balance, if there is such a thing.
Yes. So I try not to work on Sunday. I do have a day of rest. I have to have a day of rest because, like, I just got back from San Francisco yesterday. It was spring forward. My body clock's a little off, so I have to have a day of rest. So that's one of my work-life balances. I do use Calendly. I have a lot of automation around myself. So, like, if somebody decides to make an appointment with me, they can do that. It'll all automate it. So I've automated a lot of myself. I use my natural kind of developer self to, you know, I won't answer your email during the day sometimes. You won't get an email from me till 7 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 5 o'clock, you know. I just use kind of my natural flow of myself So I do know how to manage my time. And then as far as work-life balance, I am going to Hawaii eventually this year, as soon as I book the trip. That's my favorite place on the planet. So that's how I do it.
I am not a techie, other than just basic stuff. I really don't know what blockchain is. Is there a two-minute?
You know what? I don't have the blockchain slides, but I will say what it is. A blockchain is four words. There's a big controversy. What is a blockchain? So here's the definition of a blockchain, and it's only four words, and then you're going to know more than most people. So a blockchain is a distributed means it's not all in one place. It's encrypted, which means it's private and protected. It's immutable, which means it is a permanent record. And then it's a ledger, debit, credit. Think of a ledger. It's just like accounting. Same thing. That's it. That's a blockchain. It's not a smart contract. It's not, you hear about all this. It's not that. That's what it is. That's the essence of a blockchain.
Who's using it?
I have a blockchain accelerator, so I have several companies using a blockchain. You mean what is a practical usage?
Yes.
So out of the blockchain, so I'm working with a company now called TravNow. They're going to put bookings and kind of track their commissions on a blockchain. I had several companies out of the accelerator. One is doing opioid prevention on the blockchain, so they're tracking scripts. So like if you go to a doctor and write like 100, get 100 drugs, they're going to track that. I have another one that's tracking medical records on the blockchain. The other one was tracking music rights and kind of how do you go about doing music workflow on the blockchain. There's just many applications. I haven't seen a voting on the blockchain. I've seen a lot of supply chain, logistics. Another company I'm working with is doing distribution and identity on the blockchain. So it's an alcohol company. Okay. There's a lot of applications of blockchain.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Awesome. Those are mine. Specifically.
Thank you for coming out here. I appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. It is early.
It is. Third cup over here. So you talk a lot about poker. So what was one of the hands that you, what was one of the hands that you were given when you were exploring through many of your careers that you were just like, you had a really hard time folding it? Like, just that you really had to think about and go from there. And did you end up folding or did you play it?
No, I don't give up. Because like I said, there's always another hand in poker. See, blackjack, they're going to take all your chips too. So you got to like quit at some point. So when I started TechGenai, repositioning the company was tough. And when I repositioned it, you have a lot of friends and they are all well-meaning, but they all say, well, when are you going to give up on this? Or when are you going to do this? And you get all these other voices from outside of you trying to tell you what to do about you. And I'm like, well, I can't give up. I'm like so close to the end. And so for yourself, you have to be clear about what that looks like. And then are you, a part of being all in is all in on you. So, I wasn't going to give up my company. That company ran for 9 years. I wasn't going to just stop my company because that was uncomfortable for some other people. So you have to be kind of clear on yourself, and then you have to be clear about the voices you're hearing and not hearing and what you're listening to and not listening to. And then are you really committed to what you said you were started out to do? Does that make sense?
There are a lot of companies that are started by people who don't have the technical skills and need
Absolutely.
A CTO.
Work with a lot of those people.
So I was going to ask, what do you recommend for, on both sides of that, for the company that is looking for a CTO, especially pre-funded or, bootstrapped startup, what process should they go through? And on the CTO side of it, what should they be looking for? What should they be willing to accept to be at the early stages of a startup company?
So startups are always so fun and interesting. Being in startup land as a CTO, so I don't code anymore. I retired from coding. I code my own things now. I don't code professionally. I stopped doing that about maybe 15 months ago now, not too long ago. Because as a CTO, well, let's go back. Oh, that's the end. Strategy. You either want the CTO at the high level trying to determine what to architect and design, what to create, what user stories, how are you going to do your IP protection, how are you going to, are you going to do build, buy, integrate, are you going to, you know, how are you going to do all this? How are you going to start managing people? Who are you going to hire? How many people are you going to hire? How is this going to be on a budget? You either want the CTO to do that and this, because you're at the C level. C's chief, you're at the C level. T is technical. That doesn't mean you're the coder. O is officer of the company, so you can do this. You want them to be strategic, because most people that want a CTO want a coder as well. And it's two different, it's not two different skill sets. You're either going to be strategic or tactical. So coding is a tactical thing to do, and it's also semi-commoditized now. So you can go on Upwork or, you know, Fiverr or some of these other places and find coders. So if you want something built, that's different than if you want somebody to make sure it's being built correctly. Two different things. Because the person that's building it may not know how to build it correctly, which is some of the problem with Ethereum. You know, you weren't at the Ethereum versus EOS, but I mean, some of the problems that happens is if you just have somebody building it and then they're the main strategic person as well, it can, you know, it's two different kind of modalities. And so, and it's tiring. CTO, and then you're coding, and then your strategy, coding, it's tiring. It's a big context switch, and most people don't understand that from a development side. I always say you got to pay me. You got to put some skin in the game, just like poker. You got to put your chips in. Like I have some chips. It doesn't have to be a lot of chips, but you got to put some chips up. Because, you know, in order to get your chips, you got to pay like $5, $10. I don't pay $5, but, you know, you got to put your $100 in. Hey, and then I give you some chips. Then it's like, here's some chips we work with. Okay, we can work around chips. Got to do that. And, you know, some take equity, some, you know, but then you also have to wonder from an investment side, if all you're doing is giving equity to people, your cap table's getting kind of messed up. And then you have to be worried about when the guy wants to write you the 100K check, 1 million check. You know, you got guys that want to write you checks, and you got all these people that may be there, may not be there with stuff on your cap table. So you have to be careful about those kind of structures as well.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm working on a startup, and I've had this discussion with some of the people that I'm, you know, helping me code about architecture. And on the one side, you know, we have a concept. We're working on a concept. And then on the other side is the architecture of the concept. And my feeling has always been that the architecture is really important. How you build it is as important as what you build. And I was recently at the AWS reInvent, and I heard Werner Vogels and his famous thing of, you know, are you well architected? Mm-hmm. Of course, he's Amazon, AWS, so he cares about architecture. How important do you feel like architecture is?
Trick question.
And over the concept, because I'm selling a concept. But I also have to build the concept. That makes
sense. So let's put it this way. So when you design software, it's very similar to architecting a house. So, like, you mean to tell me that if the architect and you get the plans for the house and, you know, you just say, hey, I'm just going to go build this house. No plans. The plumbing goes here. The electrical goes here. The light switch is here. You know, it's kind of misbuilt. Like, could you imagine if Cross Campus didn't design and architect this space, what it would look like? So, like, this is what you're asking. This is kind of what you're saying. It's kind of like, well, we're just going to trust that this architecture is going to come out the way it's supposed to, and it'll just work. It'll be scalable. It'll be fill in the blank. So if you're building an MVP or some type of prototype, that's probably, you could probably get away with that. But if you want to go and scale it, then you're going to have somebody come in, and then they're going to gut your house because they're going to have to rebuild it. And then you've spent twice. See, this is what most people don't understand. You can spend the money now, or you can spend the money later. Because if you build it wrong in the beginning, then you're going to have to rebuild it. So it becomes now a budgetary issue, fundraising. So now instead of you having to raise $1 million or $5 million, now you got to raise 10, because now you got to gut the whole house. Think of it that way. That's how it works. Same thing. Sorry, I can't see you back there, but that's okay.
Yes, hi. Thank you for sharing your great experience with different technologies. Can you talk about a little bit blockchain technology and where it's going in the future and how important it's going to be?
Wow. Okay, so I'm going to give my prediction at the Crypto Invest Summit because I'm speaking there. So I'm not going to say what it's going to be, because I'm going to say what it's going to be, and everyone's mouth is going to fall open. So I'm going to save that for that. But I will tell you that the blockchain is going to disrupt everything. If you look at what happened, like with JP Morgan, IBM just announced it's doing crypto custody. If you kind of watch the news, you can kind of see where it's going. Because it's not going to disappear. It's just going to shift. And it's going to become more enterprise level, and the banks are all going to do it. So think about what's happening as far as like money. Like, how is money now going to be created? How is money going to be spent? Who is going to control money? Think of it that way. And then you guys got to come to Crypto Invest Summit, because I'm gonna throw it out there. So I've had several predictions that have come true. I predicted the mall is going to go away. I predicted that there would be robots in McDonald's. And I also predicted there would be no bank tellers. And when I told people this, they said, Barb, you're crazy. Like, I've told people there won't be any more software engineers as well. That got a lot of people mad. A computer can do it. So, I mean, when I throw this out, it probably will happen, because I've seen some things in the world and I'm like, ooh, this is out. This is out. This is going to be. So I'm not going to spoil it. Spoiler alert. I'm not going to spoil it. But the blockchain will be everywhere. It'll just be like, you know how back in the day, nobody knew what a cloud was. Like, what is a cloud? Why would we put that in a cloud? That's how the blockchain will be.
Another question back
because of my prediction.
Hi, Barb. Thanks for your inspiration.
Thank you.
On days that you hit me as a person that has your hand on the rudder all the time, and I'd like to hear about the days that you don't have the hand on the rudder, and if you're ever going to give up the rudder to somebody else.
So, yes, I am grooming. I'm trying to groom my son to do some of this. He is interested in this area from an economic side. So the thing that's attractive to me about the blockchain and kind of just tech in general is the blockchain specifically is kind of the intersection of the two best sides of me, the money side and the tech side. And so my son is kind of more interested in the economic side. And a lot of people do ask me kind of like, which careers are going to be happening in the blockchain space? You don't have to be technical to be in the blockchain space. It is a technical thing. But we do need, I mean, clearly we need UI UX people, because none of these developers know how to build anything that looks good. And gaming hasn't quite happened in there. AR, I think, will kind of go in there and help with mass adoption, with Samsung now putting a wallet on their phone. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, they're probably going to have one of the first distributed app stores, Samsung. Like, that makes sense, right? They got all the wallets. They can put all the apps now on their phone. So that's great. So if you look at kind of what's happening there, my son needs to get involved in that. But yeah, I'm grooming some other people for that. Absolutely. And I mentor other people, and I mentor kids, and I work with a lot of kids as well. You know, I don't talk about my philanthropic, you know, because that is just a natural part of myself. I look at what I do as helping people, because if you want to start a company, you need help. If you want to go into the blockchain space, you need help. If you need your idea vetted, you need help. And so, like, I give back in that way. I just look at my whole what I do is helping people. So that's like kind of my natural bent.
Over here.
Can you share a little bit about your ideal fitment for the accelerator that you've got? Like, you know, companies maybe been through a few stages up to like 750K. Is that too small, too big?
We don't really care. Well, we do care about your stage. We really don't want ideation. I mean, we like ideas.
Right. So prototype
we're accelerating you. So if you have a prototype, you're actually a fit. We're blockchain agnostic because it doesn't say EOS or let's go back. Let's go forward.
And then as the final thing before I hand
it back to Mike. It's not the EOS accelerator. It's the blockchain accelerator. So we're blockchain agnostic. We look at public and private blockchains. The two healthcares are looking at Hyperledger, Corda. Okay. You know, we don't really care about
that. Healthcare, so.
Well, that's healthcare, but then the labs was looking at Corda as well. And okay. No one's doing kind of anything on the public blockchains yet. We have a few companies that are actually working at protocol level that have applied. So that's actually interesting to me personally, because I think some things can be put at the protocol level.
Great. And the last thing is maybe a little detail about the summit and what you'll be doing there specifically. And
the Crypto Invest Summit. Wow. They said, Barb, we were talking about you and we want you to talk. And I said, wow, that's very flattering. So I said, of course. So I'm supposed to be talking about exactly what she asked about, which is kind of how is distributed ledger technology going to evolve in the future? Like, what's the future of it looking like? So you're not going to get my prediction either until that day. If you were trying to get it out of me, I'm tired, but I'm not that tired. Yeah, you guys got to come to that because I'm telling you, it's going to be out there. It's kind of out there. Yes.
So I'm an IP attorney. I do patents, but I also work with software companies.
Yes.
So I just, as you were talking about strategy, how important kind of, not just with blockchain, but in general, when you're talking about limited dollars that a small tech company has, when you're thinking about what do they do with their IP, mm-hmm. how important is patents, given how difficult they are to get in the overall strategy and how they spend their dollars? Is that something, is execution more important, building the product, getting out the door, versus spending any money on trying to chase patents? Just what role do they play in your strategy?
I mean, you have to look at patents, especially on the blockchain side or in anything you're doing, because there's some things that are patentable as you know, and some things that are not patentable. So when you're creating these softwares, some of this on the blockchain side is definitely patentable because it doesn't exist, hasn't existed. Now I'm working on a few frameworks as far as like how do we put things in and out of the blockchain, you know, for now. And that might disappear, but that could potentially be patentable. Now, IBM has patents, you know, Visa has patents, some of these other things. Like, I don't know what they built. I don't know what Visa built on the blockchain. So I don't know how they got all these patents. So there, you do have to have some kind of strategic patents, because it could be your algorithms. It could be the way you're doing it. It could be your processes. There, you know what some of that is, being an IP attorney. It's a trade-off. You're not going to do it at startup phase, but you may do it, you know, a little bit later. You can't ignore patents, because patents is a protection mechanism. Unless you're going to go and partner, which I do this as well, creating an ecosystem for a startup company, if you're not going to do that and partner with like Amazon and all these big guys, then you better have some patents, because it's a moat. Yes.
I come from the online advertising space where fraud is a huge issue, and there's talk that blockchain could be sort of the be-all and end-all to solve fraud issues. I also come from a part where speed is critically important in a marketplace where there's sort of millions of transactions per second, and they have to clear in milliseconds, and that blockchain has some fundamental speed issues. I was wondering if
it depends on which blockchain you're using.
If that's true,
depends on which blockchain you're using.
Yeah,
you missed my EOS versus Ethereum talk clearly.
Yeah,
but there are speed issues. So this is kind of a myth. Everything's not going to be put on a blockchain, FYI. Even it doesn't matter which blockchain you're using. Everything is not going to be built on a blockchain. So if you ever want to use AI for right now, that cannot go on a blockchain. Too slow. Blockchain too slow. Blockchain AI is going to, you know, get very confused. If you're doing any kind of training around that data, that AI is not going to be happy. So you have to keep that off chain. Or maybe you do some things and put it in a side chain. It kind of depends on what you're doing. But if you need speed, most speed is still off chain. Even when you see these exchanges and some of these other things happening, there are, a lot of them are off chain. But then what does that mean from a architecture and design phase is that you have to be more conscientious about security concerns, because now you've created a single point as to where a hacker can come and get you. So you have to be very clear, like, okay, if we're going to keep this off chain, what kind of data is here? Is it critical data? Is it like money? Is it what? So you can make sure all the security is good there. Because the blockchain is inherently secure if you program it correctly. Yet again, this is all about us humans. You have to code it correctly. You're welcome.
Yeah.
All right.
Hi, Barbara. I'm an aspiring philanthropist, and I have a question. I don't really know much about technology and blockchain. This is very new for me. But I have a question. How can nonprofits integrate this technology? Is there any link between blockchain and the nonprofit sector?
Yes. So I know that NGOs are trying to use it. So as far as like tracking people, like let's say you're a refugee. We were at a hackathon about, I guess it was last November with the USAID, and some people were trying to like track refugees on the blockchain. So if you're displaced out of your home and you're somewhere else, how do you track those people? Like, who are they? Who's their identity? Where's their family? Fill in the blank. So that's a use of the blockchain. Clearly, if you want to take donations via blockchain, that could be done. And I know a couple of charities that have done that from a recording side of it. If you want to validate like who your charitable person is, like maybe you have some big donors, you can kind of use the blockchain and the identity KYC AML verification process to do that. So there are usages in the philanthropic, social responsible areas. I know a lot of people are trying to do things with energy and things with kind of water, land, kind of how do you track those things and make sure all the ecosystem is being properly preserved. So there's a lot going in the sustainability area there.
Hey, Barbara. Well, I've just got time for one more question.
All right.
And it's, I think, related to the gentleman back here.
Yes.
About the crypto investment conference that's coming up. Yes. When is it and where is it going to be held?
So the Crypto Invest Summit is kind of the biggest one around town. Alan and Joseph are my friends, and they put this conference on for the last, I guess, 5 years now. I guess this is 5 or 6 years. It's downtown L.A. It's at the Convention Center. It's April 8 and 9. 8 and 9. And 10, 8, 9, and 10. So that's where it is, and that's kind of the timing of that.
Thank you, Barbara. Before you go down, step down, let's get a picture of you.
So step down here.
Next week, we have Amir. Amir, stand up. Amir has been a longtime member of our group. All right. Amir is going to speak. Amir's got a solar marketplace that he's built, a technology company. He's got an amazing background. He's going to talk about going from immigrant to entrepreneur. He's going to talk about his story, building this. He's got a great background going from, I mean, I know you from some other solar projects and then Solar City and coming here. And so it's very, very exciting. Please come next week. Amir's going to give a great presentation. No pressure. Thank you, everybody. Have a great weekend.